41. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Are you making as much money on your job as you should? Are you getting paid what you're worth? Do you have paycheck paranoia? Well, tonight we're offering career advice for those looking for a raise and how to get ahead in your career. My guests are Kevin Carrington with the National Association of African Americans in Human Resources. Also, Sam Sanders, a human resources professional. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in. And if you have a question, if you have a comment for tonight's program, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Okay, let's first talk about paycheck paranoia. Can somebody give me a working definition, Sam?
Paycheck paranoia, I believe, is the feeling of anxiety that you have when it's time to be paid, you know, and the feeling of not being able to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm. But as it relates to that, the guy that's in the cubicle next to you, creating those same widgets and sprockets as you do, doing just as good of a job as you're doing, but there's something about him that suggests to you that he's making more money. How do you find that out, Kevin? Do you ask him?
You know, a lot of companies have policies against asking someone how much they make because they're trying to make sure that those conversations don't happen. We would encourage you to ask. I mean, nothing hurts to ask, and all they can do is say, well, I'm not going to share that with you.
Yeah, or I'd probably say none of your business, Kevin.
Right. Yeah, because salary is a very personal thing. So a lot of people don't want to share that information. But, you know, there may be some indicators that someone is making more. They're living, you know, say maybe where you live or someplace near where you live, so you know roughly what they're paying in rent, yet they're living well beyond their means. Unfortunately, that's not a guarantee because it could be that their parents are funding their lifestyle. So there's really not a way to know other than to do your research. And your research may include asking that question as a first step, but the second step really includes going to the website, because when people leave the organization, a lot of times they're more apt to share what they were making, and that may be the reason they left.
Right? But is it easier to find out? It's one thing if you work in a fast food place, right? Okay, and you know that everybody's going to start out at $13 or $12 or $15 an hour. But once you start getting into the upper echelons of a professional career, you could be the manager of your division, and there are 20 divisions. How do you know that you're not at the lower end of the pay scale?
Sure. And frankly, I think that the question is being asked kind of late in the cycle. We first should do the research, the necessary market research, to determine as I'm, you know, pursuing an opportunity, you know, what does the market suggest that I should be paid? And that's the point. Whether or not I'm being paid what my counterpart might be paid is really not the question. The question is, am I being paid fairly? And that's more of where we should stick a pin, because, again, there are different scenarios, circumstances that would suggest that, you know, maybe a person comes with different levels of certifications, different degrees that would warrant a higher compensation. And so I think the stance or where we should hang our hat is, am I being paid fairly, and does the market align with what my compensation package?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about paycheck paranoia. Are you getting paid what you're worth? Are you making as much money on your job as you should? And how do you make more if you feel you deserved it? We're also joined right now by Lisa Brown Alexander. Lisa is the CEO and founder of Nonprofit HR and author of Strong on the Outside, Dying on the Inside. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So if you believe that you are an A-plus worker and doing the grind better than anyone else, how do you approach your boss about a raise? And what are the determining factors in whether or not you get a raise?
Well, the first thing to do is approach your supervisor candidly. Say, listen, I believe I'm a highly talented person. I'm contributing effectively in my role. You've told me that, right? So you need some validation. You can't just think you're great and not get that feedback. But if you've been told that you're doing an outstanding job and you're a high performer, leverage that feedback to say, can we talk about my compensation? And ask the questions directly. Am I being paid comparably with my colleagues? If you don't get feedback or the answer that you're looking for in terms of a direct answer from your supervisor, then I would encourage you to go to your human resources department and raise the concern there. Between those two entities, someone should be able to give you some direction. But it is important that if you're going to benchmark or want to know where your compensation is, that you are comparing yourself to other professionals of similar experience doing similar work in similar industries. For example, in human resources, if you're with a tech firm or a Fortune 500 company, you're going to be compensated differently than you would if you worked at a nonprofit. So even though you might have a similar role, the scope of the role, the size of the organization can absolutely determine what's fair and reasonable.
But doesn't that also depend on who you work for, what their financial sheets are looking like, where absolutely. You're working, the geography, cost of living, all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
it absolutely matters.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
Sure. So, and I think that before you even approach an employer, it's first determining what do I need to leave my home? You know, so it's not an employer telling me what I'm worth. It's me, again, doing my market research and then telling them this is what I need to be able to come and work at your firm. So, agnostic of what your statement sheets say or what you can afford, I'm saying this is what I'm worth, and having that candid discussion. I think often people shy away from the compensation discussion, and quite frankly, that's the reason why they're not paid according to what the market would suggest.
Yeah, and usually I say that you've got to become comfortable with these uncomfortable conversations, because it is a little bit uncomfortable to go into your boss and say to them that I'm worth more,
sure.
Ultimately. And as Sam shared, you need to understand your market. You need to understand the value you bring to the organization. Are you contributing to the organization? Do you know what the organization strategy is? Do you understand how to contribute to the organization? Because a lot of people come in and they just do their job. And that's great. We want you to do your job. But the company or organizations pay for performance. They may not say it. They may not have a pay-for-performance plan in place, but they pay for performance. And if you outperform the guy sitting next to you or the person sitting next to you, they're going to pay you more because you're going to be more valuable to them. So you've got to create that value in their mind.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about getting paid what you're worth. Are you making as much money on your job as you believe you should? Are you experiencing paycheck paranoia? If you have a question, if you have a comment about advancing in your job, not just as it relates to your paycheck, but in other areas, give us a call. The doctors are in tonight at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You were about to say something, Sam.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you think about being a contributor, what employers are looking for, and it's often a question I ask during the interview process is, what was the last problem you solved? You know, and so you can be an individual contributor, and that's good, you know, and that's important. But we're looking for problem solvers, you know, we're managing the bottom line. I often speak about the two roles that a HR strategic partner plays, and that's both as an employee advocate, but as a strategic business partner. And so you want to advance the employee and have them to understand their career trajectory and know that there is a place here for you. But you also are managing our internal resources. You know, do we have, you know, the compensation plan in place to ensure that people are compensated fairly? And, you know, but again, we want people to understand that beyond just coming in and doing your widgets or responding to emails, what was the last problem you solved, and how did that help with the strategic vision of the organization?
But Lisa, here's my question, because a lot of employers, if you're doing a good job, if you are exceeding expectations, sometimes you will hear from managers, well, just be glad you have a job. And that should be payment enough. That is not an unusual attitude. So how do you deal with that?
It's increasingly unusual because we're in a job seekers market. It used to be that all the power rested with the employer. But as unemployment decreases and demand for filling positions with qualified talent increases, more and more the job seeker has more control than they realize. And so, as was previously said, you have to know your worth. If you believe and you have experience that says that you should be earning $100,000 and someone offers you $80,000, you have to be prepared to walk away. But if you accept $80,000, you're doing so knowing that the organization does not value the role at the same place that you do.
Exactly.
And that's a conversation that we often don't have. We take the lower salary and then we become angry that we're not paid where we think we should be paid. If the organization is straightforward and says we can pay you at 80, you have to make the decision as a job seeker to walk away.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. We're talking about paycheck paranoia. Are you getting paid what you're worth? Are you making as much money on your job as the next guy? Let me go to the phone lines. Anna, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Anna. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling to find out what you would do when you have a subordinate that's making just $8,000 less than you, that has over the years exceeded the performance review process but has not produced the same level as what you're producing because you're the supervisor. How do you go about addressing that equity when they said, well, she's just been here longer, so you're stuck?
Anyone.
Well, organizations do recognize experience, and what happens over time is that someone who's been with an organization for a long time can eventually make a significant amount of money. You know, it is a factor that is very real. But one of the things that you can do is approach your human resources department and say, listen, I'm concerned that we have an internal equity problem. Mm-hmm. And as the supervisor of this individual, there's very little space between what she's earning or he's earning and what I'm earning. What are the salary ranges of other supervisors in this organization? And where do I fall in respect to that? And how does the spread between my salary and my subordinate salary compare with other departments, right? So you're not necessarily asking them to give you John and Susan and Mary's pay, but how are you compensated relative to them, right? And that puts them on notice that you're aware that there may not be an equitable situation there.
Yeah, and in that situation, you also, so that we call that pay compression. And exactly right. Lisa is exactly right in terms of having your HR professional look into that, because it may be that for some reason your salary, because of when you started and how you've progressed through the organization, is not in line with the way the market is going and where the market should be, especially if your peers have been hired from outside of the organization. They tend to be hired at a higher rate. So how do you get to that? You know, there's leveling opportunities for HR to help you in that situation, and looking at it, even bringing in an outside organization to do an analysis that is more neutral. to help you in that situation. But there are lots of ways to do that, but it really starts with engaging your HR professional.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Michelle calling from D.C. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Go right ahead.
Yes, please. I need some answers. I know this is talking about, you said paycheck. I'm on SSI. Please give me a number because I have 10 years in federal government, extensive work history, but they only gave me the minimum of people who get who only get $750 a month. I have paycheck anxiety. But the thing about it is I still have my SS50 from the government. I have all my paperwork from 1977.
Hold, Michelle, I need you to hold your point, and I'm going to see if our experts on the panel can answer your question on the other side of this break. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue as we discuss paycheck paranoia, getting paid what you're worth. Are you making as much money on your job as you should? And how do you talk to your employer about advancement, not just more money, but also your position? Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about paycheck paranoia. Are you making what you believe you should on your job? How do you ask for a raise? How do you ask for career advancement? My guests are Kevin Carrington with the National Association of African Americans in Human Resources, Sam Sanders, a human resources professional, and Lisa Brown Alexander, CEO and founder of Nonprofit HR and author of Strong on the Outside, Dying on the Inside. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We were talking to Michelle before the break. Michelle, re-ask your question for us, please, in brief. Michelle, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, ask your question, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, yes. I'm just turned 59, and I'm on SSI disability. But they gave me SSI 750, the minimum. But I have all my SF50s from the D.C. government, FedEx, Howard University, a librarian there. And how did they give me the minimum? And how do I request to – because I have paycheck anxiety. That's what the commercial says. But I really need a number or something. Please tell me, can I adjust my – I have all my paperwork.
Well, let me see if – if Kevin has a possible answer for you. Kevin, go right ahead, please.
So Michelle, this is what you're asking about is a little different than the standard paycheck because you said you're on disability. Is that correct?
Yes, but they gave me SSI. They didn't give me SSDI.
Yeah, so the process that you're going to have to really engage back with your HR leaders within the organization, and most organizations have someone who focuses on disability and can understand and kind of explain what's going on, number one, and then number two, what are your options to, one, either to move to the, you said SSDI, to increase your paycheck, or what the process is to either increase or to return back to work if, in fact, you're going to be capable of doing that sometime in the near future. But that one is a little different than what we're talking about today.
I
would encourage you to do that, to reach back out to your organization because it sounds like there may be some problem in terms of how they coded you when you went out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Rhonda, calling from Maryland. Rhonda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I was calling because I am a contractor with the federal government, and there's a disparity in the sense that there's a sub, there's a prime and a sub. I work on the subcontract under the prime, but there are people who have five, six less years, same position by title, and they're making $20,000 to $25,000 more than me. I've been there for 7 years. They came in when the prime picked up the contract about 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm just wondering that, do I talk to my contracting company, which is the sub? Do I go to the prime? Do I talk to the agency, HR? How would I best address this?
Sure. So that's a great question. And the work that I do with my firm, Metronome, we have a similar relationship with prime subcontracting. And so your employer is the subcontractor. That is your employer. The prime, the relationship that the prime has with the subcontractor is totally aside from your employment. So, in terms of who you speak with, that would be your company, the subcontractors, HR representative, because they would be able to answer those questions. But I want to step back here because I think this happens and we hear about this. I get calls about this daily, and what typically happens is you have someone who simply just had a better negotiation conversation. And so they were aware of what the market would dictate, and they leveraged that, their experience, their maybe certifications and trainings to get a better offer. And so often it's not a matter of what the company is doing to be underhanded or anything like that. It really is just a matter of the person going in with a better negotiating tactic.
Yeah. Rhonda, thank you so much for your phone call. Lisa, this question is for you, and I don't know whether or not you are familiar with this, but I'll share this. A couple of weeks ago, 60 Minutes ran a story about what was described as gender pay disparities. The company Salesforce considered the best place to work in America, a very wealthy company, did an audit and found that their female employees were paid considerably less than male employees with the same title. As a result, to bring about pay equity, gender pay equity, they spent $6 million to bring women, no matter where they were in their time with the company, up to scale. Is that a panacea for companies? Do you think that more companies should do that? Is it too much to ask for companies to do what seems to be the right thing?
Great questions. So yes, should every company do it? Absolutely. But in reality, the cost of leveling the playing field can absolutely cripple an organization. When we work with organizations where there are equity issues, we encourage them to do it over a period of time in a way that is, you know, aligned with their budget capability and their financial capability as an organization. But yes, gender equity issues from a salary standpoint are not unusual. Many organizations, for-profit and non-profit, face gender equity issues from a pay perspective. Why? Because most people are paid in a new role based on what they were paid in their last role.
Right.
And that perpetuates the cycle. So if I was underpaid in job one, when I move to job two, they're going to ask me what I earned in the last job. And they may offer me a slight bump in pay, 10-15%, but that will enable me or cause me to continue to lag behind the salaries of the men who are always or consistently paid more than women. So this is a significant issue. It's a systemic issue. And I, quite frankly, I applaud Salesforce for taking the step that they did. However, many companies cannot afford to you know, have a cash infusion of $6 million to fix their pay equity concerns.
But aren't the potential lawsuits and the bad publicity more costly?
It can be, but this is not a unique problem. And if you went to any organization in any city across the country, you're likely to find pay equity concerns, not just on a gender basis, but also along racial lines. Mm-hmm. So this is not a kind of a one-off, you know, isolated situation. This is a chronic issue that this country has been battling, and employers have been faced or forced to come, you know, face to face with, particularly in the wake of the Me Too movement and women speaking about, you know, about inequities in the workplace.
Yeah. One thing I would also share is that ADP did some research, mm-hmm. and they found that on average, men make 28% more than women across industry. So this is a national and even global problem. One of the things that Lisa talked about was the history of your pay. Some states have taken that on head on. Oregon, Delaware, California, Massachusetts have already passed laws that you can no longer in the interview process ask about a person's pay history,
right,
because of exactly this pay equity issue. So that's a start, so that when people start with these organizations, they aren't starting behind the eight ball, having given a history of where they were, and then just getting a slight bump as opposed to being paid what the job is worth. So that's a good start. But for those who are already in the marketplace, already working at that organization, companies, I know, and at the company I work for, we are actively working with organizations to address this pay equity issue.
Sure.
And really looking to help them. And it is an overtime movement. I mean, you know, Salesforce, kudos to them for having the profit and deciding to use that to level the playing field. Most organizations, at least to share, don't have the ability to do that immediately. But taking the steps to do it and to address it and to start to do it over a period of time,
right,
one is a little less costly and in the end will give your organization a boost because people will understand you're trying to do the right thing.
But in those states that don't have laws against asking about salary history, I think that can be problematic. If you are coming from, you know, Sandtown, Montana, as the HR director out there, and they're paying you $40,000 and you're living high on the hog in Sandtown, Montana, but then you get pulled into DC and, you know, the big ivory tower company says, well, how much were you making in Sandtown, Montana?
Right.
And you tell them $40,000. Oh, well, gosh, we can pay you $80,000. And then you try to get a house in D.C. and you hear womp womp because you realize that even though your salary is doubled, you're still underpaid. How can an employee know what the compensation is for any particular job, geographically speaking, cost of living and all of that? Because even though you can Google it, you could still get underpaid.
Sure.
if you don't know the real numbers.
So there are tons of resources that are available for free. You have salary.com, which is a tool that a lot of actually employers use. And this allows you to do that market research, to put in specific zip code, put in specific titles. And this does give a fairly, at least a pay range as to where you should be. Now, I also believe that there is a duty and responsibility on the employer for those states where there's not a law in place that would prevent an employer from asking those questions. That there are tools that an employer could purchase. Their Economic Research Institute is a tool that a lot of employers use for pricing, but also it's a compensation analysis tool that allows you to be able to benchmark against what the market says and then to remain competitive as you begin to escalate those employees. So again, I think there is a duty and responsibility on the employer, but I also think that the employee potentially potential candidates need to do their own market analysis, you know, ask questions. There might be people that are, you know, working in similar fields, and it's to dig in. It may take some time, but again, those tools are available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing is when you come into a job, you don't have to accept what the employer is offering you. You can negotiate. The unfortunate thing, and again, going back to that, you know, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, you've got to ask for what it is you need. Do your research, you know, salary.com, Payscale, Glassdoor. I mean, there are many websites out there that will give you that geographical information. But once you've done that, now you need to go in, and when your employer says, okay, yeah, we're going to offer you $80,000 based on your history and so on, you can say, well, you know, I've done my research, and my research shows that this position is being paid $120,000, and I've done my research also on your market, and the market is holding up at that $120,000, and in order to live in the D.C. area versus my Sandtown, Montana, I think you said, I need to make $120,000. And again, they're recruiting you. This is your opportunity to negotiate, because once they get you and you're an employee there, there's very little leverage you have to negotiate, because you're already there. They've already got your talent. And in order to keep your job, you've got to keep doing your job. So if you want to get what you're worth, you need to do your homework up front, and you need to negotiate and be willing to have those tough conversations.
And no shade. Well, hold on, Lisa. Hold your thought, if you don't mind, because I've got to take a break. And also, no shade for the folks in Sandtown, Montana. I just made that up. But hold your thought, Lisa. Please do not forget it, because I want you to get your point in totality after this break. So please stay with us. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Do you have paycheck paranoia? How do you get rid of that? How do you get paid what you're worth? And are you making as much money on your job as you should? We're continuing the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us.
This is Renee Nash. You know, ladies, we tend to be willing to talk to each other about...
On Sirius XM Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about paycheck paranoia, getting paid what you think you deserve on your job, as well as moving forward, taking the next steps in your career. Lisa, before the break, you were going to make a point. Please go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on the comment that was made about, you know, going in and negotiating for what you think you're worth. For women, you know, many women are not oriented to go in and request what they think they're worth, which perpetuates the wage equity gap that exists between men and women. And so if we don't ask, we don't get. And if we don't get, then we get what's given to us, which perpetuates us lagging behind in terms of compensation. So we have to really get comfortable with saying, I'm worth X, I'm going to ask for X, and be prepared to walk away if we don't get what we feel is due us. And that's something that I think a lot of folks are challenged with.
What are they doing instead of what you're suggesting?
They're accepting what's offered. And, you know, the assumption is that if somebody offers you $75,000 a year, you should take it. If you know that the position after your research and you've gone on salary.com and some of the other places that are out there, and the market in Washington or wherever, whatever city you're in, says that you should be paid more, then bring that out and ask for it. And instead of just saying, okay, thanks, I'll take it, and hope to get an increase later on. Not a good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus the increase that you get later on is going to be somewhere in the range of, in today's market, you know, 1 to 3%.
Right.
And if you change jobs, if you go from one job to another job, typically you get 10 to 15% increase.
That's right.
So if you think about it from that perspective, leaving an organization and going to another organization, getting 10 to 15%, staying with the same organization, getting 1 to 3%, I mean, it's very easy to understand that sometimes you've got to be willing to walk away. Sometimes you've got to be willing to move. The other thing is, If you're in the same job and within an organization, you can't hope to, you know, to really see major increases by doing the same job every day.
Right.
You need to be thinking promotion. Right. I was fortunate when I first started. I started with Xerox back in 1983. And I got a chance to meet a gentleman named Barry Rand, who ultimately became the executive VP of Xerox and ultimately the president of Avis at one point, and or the CEO of Avis. And he told us that, you know, we asked him, how did you get there? How did you become a vice president at Xerox and then ultimately a senior vice president and executive vice president? And he said, every 2 years, I had to move to a new job. I had to be promoted to something bigger, making that 10 to 15% increase from where I was previously. And that's how I got to this level and how I got there in a profitable way, meaning I got there being paid what I should have been paid. So it makes a difference, but you got to have a strategy, you got to have a plan, and you got to implement your plan to make something like that happen.
Mm-hmm. And if you work for a small employer, moving up the chain may be more challenging, so you may have to move out. Sometimes it's not up, it's out.
Correct.
Your thoughts about that, Sam, also?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand you know, the full gamut of before you're getting into a role. You want to make sure that there is value in what you contribute, you know, and so there are, I believe, you know, some employers, they may not necessarily value a particular role. And so it's understanding, getting a feel of the culture. I think, the website also provides some information you can dig in and maybe talk to, previous employees on LinkedIn that kind of give you some insight to the company's culture. Those are also telltale signs of how this company's strategic plan is when it comes to compensation.
Well, but it's interesting because Kevin just spoke about the example of the gentleman, and it would appear to me that in order to do that kind of inside networking may require a mentor, but can you pick your mentor, or does your mentor pick you?
Oh, you should absolutely. I think when it comes to that, you know, I speak about, you know, when I do trainings, you know, there has to be an internal hunger that you have. And so a part of that is reaching out to people that are doing what you want to do, you know. And so if there is a role that you say that you want to obtain, then it's looking for opportunities to connect with people that hold those actual roles, and it's seeking after them. Hey, you know, one of the strategies I had, there was my current mentor, you know, I knew that he would be speaking at a conference. And so I knew that, you know, he was scheduled to speak on one particular day. I reached out to him on LinkedIn. Hey, I know you're going to be in as a planner. I want to, let's set up lunch. Let's set up dinner. And what you're doing is, this is sending the message. Listen, I'm serious about connecting, and I'm serious about getting connected to you. And so to me, absolutely, the mentee should absolutely reach out and connect with the mentor in an aggressive way.
But not everybody's going to want to mentor you, even if you reach out to them.
Right. But I think, you know, to Sam's point, you want to be able to try and pick your mentor or your mentee, and you hope they will pick you as a mentee. But the other thing is, you've got to be willing to make the investment in yourself. You've got to be willing to go that extra mile. I know that, you know, you look at, you know, to use an analogy of a Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, people see the end product. People see the greatness that he's achieved. They don't see all the hard work. They don't see him going to the driving range and hitting, you know, 150 buckets of balls to get to where he needed to get to. So the same goes for you and your job. Are you doing the things you need to be doing? Are you going the extra mile? Are you learning while you're in your job? Meaning, are you going back to school? Maybe not formally, but are you attending professional organizations? The National Association of African Americans and Human Resources is a professional organization designed to help both personal and professional growth for African Americans in the HR profession. Are you a member of that organization? Are you investing in yourself to be able to hopefully have others see that you're making that investment in yourself, and that investment is bringing value to the organization, and that value is something they're going to now want to pay you for.
Your thoughts on mentors and mentees, Lisa?
Well, I think it's critical to align yourself with someone who can help. You have a perspective that you otherwise wouldn't have, right? So that's what a mentor is for, to provide some coaching, to give you some direction that you wouldn't get on your own. But I also think, in addition to having a mentor, taking initiative is one of the most critical assets to career mobility. And I see so many people leave that on the table. They don't take initiative. As you said earlier, they do what's put in front of them, but no more. In my firm, the people who have been the most successful have been the ones who think outside of the box and who are willing to take risks and who are willing to step up even before they're asked. And many people don't do that. That's how you get noticed, whether you're in corporate America, higher ed, or a nonprofit organization. Taking initiative is something that so many people do not do, and they fail to get recognized for that reason. Mm-hmm. You have to be your best own commercial, your best own advocate.
And that piggybacks on something else I want to ask, and this is specifically for you, Lisa, because you've been on this program before, familiar with your story. You were a corporate worker bee, and now you're the boss.
That's right.
as the boss, what did you learn that you refuse to do now as the boss? What happened to you that you found unpleasant as the corporate worker bee that you said, well, if I ever become the boss, I'm not going to do it. And now I am the boss. What did you keep and what did you throw away?
I kept trust in the workplace. You know, I learned that from a couple of really wonderful managers that I had. When I was trusted and given space to grow, I really got to thrive. And so when I became a CEO, I made sure to create a culture of trust in my firm. That's probably one of our greatest assets. And sometimes people come into my company and they really don't know how to handle that. When we say we're a trust-based environment, they're like, well, what do you mean? I can't really trust that you're saying that you're a trust-based environment. Because people are not accustomed to that. They're not accustomed to leadership and management being open to upward feedback, meaning feedback coming from their direct reports. We do that at my firm. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I aspired to early in my career was running something. And so I positioned myself consistently to take initiative. I positioned myself with leadership to say, I'll do it. I raised my hand. And that caused my career to just propel. And so I really want to encourage people to push yourself. You can push yourself in ways that other people can't. And when you show initiative, when you take the lead on something, even before you're asked, it will absolutely get recognized. And if it doesn't, leave and start your own.
I've got a few seconds left. A final word from you, Kevin, and then Sam.
Yeah, I think that how you show up at work is your brand. And we've been talking about mentors and those individuals that are part of your personal board of directors. You need to build that. You need to have a plan when you go to work. So, you know, going to work and just showing up is not good enough. You need to have a plan as to what you want to do. Lisa talked about she had a plan. Her plan was to become an entrepreneur and to work for herself one day. She gathered all the learning she could in the organization she was a part of, and she took that to her business, and she's now very successful in doing what she does. But you got to have a plan.
Mm-hmm. And Sam, final word from you.
Sure. So as a strategic HR business partner and also a manager, the thing that I pay attention to is the people who remove things from my plate. Those are people who that are likely to get higher pay increases. And typically when a promotion is available, that's the person I'm going to look out for. You are making my life easier every day. And so those are again, from a strategic standpoint, those are the people that you take care of.
Kevin Carrington, Sam Sanders, and Lisa Brown Alexander, thank you all for talking to us. Good conversation. Hopefully those career-oriented people, new or old, will get something out of this discussion. So again, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, May 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.